It's the roar of the presses. Working day and night in the north, south, east, and west of our nation, these daily presses pour out over 48 million newspapers. And behind these millions of headlines are the country's ace reporters, men and women who bring you the inside story. Tonight, the makers of Maxwell House Coffee bring you America's Press Conference of the Air, Meet the Press, where you'll meet top newsmen in an unrehearsed, spontaneous press conference with one of the outstanding personalities in today's news, Senator-elect Clinton P. Anderson. Ready for the conference are four of America's top newsmen who are here to ask the questions you might ask Mr. Anderson. Now meet Mr. Abe Raskin. Mr. Raskin is on the staff of the New York Times. And here is Mr. Dick Marr, distinguished reporter with the Associated Press. Also noted among the gentlemen of the press tonight is Mr. Larry Newman of the American Weekly. And another important newsman here is Murray Davis of the New York World Telegram. And here with us is radio's Miss Martha Roundtree, producer of Meet the Press. Here being introduced to the gentlemen of the press is the Honorable Clinton P. Anderson. Mr. Anderson, as you know, is the senator-elect from New Mexico, and he was the Secretary of Agriculture in President Truman's cabinet. Now, Miss Roundtree.
And now, who has the first question for Senator Anderson? Mr. Raskin.
Well, Senator, the farmers seem to have been doing a pretty good job to get the Democrats elected this time. I wonder if you could tell us a little, as a former Secretary of Agriculture, about why.
Well, the farmers, in the first place, realized that they had had several very good years. And like anyone else, they wanted to make sure that they didn't get, they wanted to be sure they weren't put through the ringer again after this war like they were after the first war. And therefore, they recognized their friends and also recognized their enemies.
Mr. Marr.
Would you say, Senator, that the farm vote is now in the Democratic camp to stay?
No, indeed. One of the things that is notable about the farm vote in this country is the flexibility of it. It floats back and forth very freely. Pretty largely dependent upon what happens to the farmer himself.
What strategy do you think was successful in getting the farmers' vote, Senator Anderson? They've always been rather conservative people, haven't they?
Yes, and they're conservative now. They don't want anything to happen to this country, and they know that a stable economy is the most conservative thing that they can have.
I know, but how do you account for them having gone Democratic?
Well, they were worried about two things. They were worried, first of all, that farm prices were going to be allowed to drop well below parity. And secondly, and parity is only equality with other segments of the economy, and second, they were worried by what they saw in the Congress that the Republicans controlled, namely that that Congress wouldn't take the advice of people who knew something about agriculture, but would go ahead and strike out a provision for the storage of grain and things of that nature, paying no attention whatever to men who'd spent a lifetime in the study of agricultural problems.
You want to get in there, Mr. Newman?
Yes, Senator, isn't it true that this parity system which has been set up means the eventual socialization of all agriculture in this country?
Oh, not at all, not at all. Why is it socialistic to be sure that the farmer gets an equality with other segments of the economy? It's only when you take the farmer and drop his prices 70% in a very short period, as we did after the last war, force him off the farm and permit someone else to come on it, that you tend towards socialism.
Go ahead, Mr. Newman.
Well, don't you penalize him for not growing or for growing? You tell him what to grow and what not to grow and how much and how many acres. Isn't that government control and slipping towards socialization?
Well, you see, the tragedy is that we don't have any acreage restrictions at all, and yet people all over the United States think we do. There hasn't been a restriction on cotton, on corn, on wheat, on potatoes, on anything of that nature. And yet all over the country there are people who believe firmly, and I say with a great deal of reason, that we have limited and restricted production, whereas for three solid years I flew all over this country talking to farm groups and pleading with them for abundant production, and we have it today.
Are you through, Mr. Newman? Let's let Mr. Davis get it. We'll come back to you.
Senator, while you were Secretary of Agriculture, how many millions of bushels of potatoes were destroyed?
Well, I wouldn't know.
Well, there were millions, weren't there?
Yes.
Were they good potatoes? Anything the matter with them?
Some of them were good.
Well, some of them weren't.
Some of them weren't.
But most of them were good.
That's right.
Why'd you destroy them? When the home relief rolls are increasing, people are without food. and yet they're destroyed.
Well, that's a nice long story that I've gone through in at least 50 press interviews.
Well, let's have it tonight.
All right. You start out to make sure that you have enough potatoes to do a job.
And what price?
And the way by which you get enough potatoes to do a job is to put a support price at a sufficient level so the farmer is tempted to grow them. Now, you've established a level for potatoes that resulted in a crop of 475 million bushels when you only needed 377.
Well, why'd you destroy the difference? Why didn't you give it to people who needed potatoes? Or why didn't you bring the price down?
You have a support price established by Congress. Said, why didn't we?
Yeah, you were Secretary of Agriculture.
That's right. And the Secretary of Agriculture still holds up his hands and says he will enforce the law, and the law says he shall support the price. Now, it just happens that a very distinguished member of Congress made some speeches about this not very long ago, just tearing his hair because I had supported the price. And one of his newspaper editors wrote to me and said, what can I say back to him? I said, you ask him the day in which he introduced an amendment to stop that.
Well, you're a senator now. Are you going to try to stop that sort of thing?
I am going to be very much in favor of a continuance of a program of price supports for the farmer of this land.
Even if it causes destruction of potatoes and millions of bushels?
Sure, it'll cause the destruction here and there. But the thing it did do, which possibly you have overlooked, is that it brought us a crop of 1,200,000,000 bushels of wheat this year when we wouldn't have had 700 million bushels or 800 million bushels if we'd stayed to our old system.
And if
you can't take
it
the whole
6 and 7 cent pound potatoes, too, instead of 2.5 and 3 cent pound potatoes.
You'd have had 6 and 7 pound potatoes if you hadn't had a price support program because they wouldn't have planted all these extra potatoes. What is hard for the average person to realize is that it is the support price that results in the abundance. Now, you just take the situation in Argentina where they didn't have a support price. Where did the price of wheat go? $5.75 a bushel? Where was it in the United States? $2.20 with your support price. It's as simple as it can be.
It isn't simple to me.
I realize that, but it's simple if you'll study the agriculture of this country over a 50-year, 100-year period.
See, Mr. Newman's dying to get back.
Well, I think that, or don't you think that your parity price has and your price supports has been one of the factors in keeping prices high and food prices high in this country?
Why, if you'll stop and think about it, you'll know that the answer to your question is no. Is a single support item entering into the price of meat? Not one, and it's very high. Cattle prices were 179%.
Wait a minute, corn though, I mean, I come from a corn-feeding county in Ohio. And
just remember that we weren't supporting the price of a single bushel of corn, a single bushel of wheat, a single product going into production of meat at all, and yet cattle prices were 179% of parity in August. Now, if we were going to support them, we would have supported them at 90% of parity, about half that figure. Do you believe the support price had anything to do with it? Nor is it having anything to do with the price of turkeys today, which are higher than they were last year? Not a support price on grain having to do with it? Not a bit.
Mr. Raskin, now we'll be right back to you, Mr.
Well, Senator, you've got a lot of things other than farm support prices to think about in your new job as senator. I wondered what you felt could be done to bring prices down in general.
Well, I've said over and over and over again that there is only one good policeman on the price control beat, and that's abundant production. It didn't do us any good when we talked about what to do about corn prices and wheat prices. It was only when we got a 3.5 billion bushel corn crop that corn prices dropped. It was only when we got 1,200,000,000 bushels of wheat and all these other tremendous outpouring of grains that grain prices came down. And if you keep those levels of production going, prices for food will be reasonable.
Mr.
Senator, do you think that price controls would prevent an abundance of goods, especially in food, meat particularly?
Well, it depends on where you put price controls. You will remember that when they passed a law by this late lamented Congress to establish some levels of price controls on livestock, after they repealed OPA controls, they said we should fix a level for livestock products. Now, I tried to put the level sufficiently high so that we could have fattening of cattle. And I don't think that you can say outright that price controls will or will not.
But we did have a shortage.
Yes, you did have a shortage. And now you're reaching a point where you don't have a shortage in any of the cereals. Now, as soon as you get an abundance in these cereals, Then you have a chance to start building up your livestock population. And you watch the size of the pig crop next year. You'll get yourselves back where you have an abundance of meat again, solely because there's enough corn so that you can have the size of a pig crop you ought to have.
That's good news.
Well, it's true.
Davis.
Well, you're talking about abundance. Now I'm going back to these potatoes. You had an abundance of potatoes, so you destroyed millions of potatoes. If you get an abundance of corn, what are you going to do with the abundance?
Well, you're going to use corn. The reason that you couldn't do anything about the potato situation was that two times I had appealed to the Congress to give us some help on this. And the Congress passed it by saying that you would never have any trouble.
What help?
What?
What kind of
help? I wanted an opportunity to adjust the price of potatoes downward so that we wouldn't have this terrific oversupply of them. Now, we couldn't get that sort of assistance from the Congress. We ought to have it. But the Secretary of Agriculture just recently has announced that he's dropping the support prices on potatoes, and a very sensible and courageous action on his part.
Well, that's your successor.
Yes, sir, and a very fine man.
Why didn't you do that before you went out?
Because the law wouldn't permit me to do it. You've
well,
taken
he's doing it.
The law has been changed.
Oh, all right.
The law got changed in July.
Mr. Newman now.
Well, let's get over to labor. Are you in favor of the entire repeal of the Taft-Hartley Act?
Well, I don't know. I've never been much of an expert on labor, as you well know. I was very busy with other things. I think I would like to see, if it were left to me, a very careful study of the Taft-Hartley Act. I don't know whether the entire act needs to be repealed. I hope if it is repealed that we reenact certain provisions of the Wagner Act. But as I say, the field of labor relations is far outside of my field, and I ought to listen to discussion. I ought to read the hearings and so forth before I make up my mind what I'm going to do. At least I hope so.
Now, gentlemen, while you catch your breath and line up some more questions, here's Ken Roberts with word about the future of television.
Friends, let's imagine what might happen if television could look right into the future. Yes, show you things that might happen many, many days before they actually do happen. Let's even imagine that this television set right here could show you something that's going to happen this coming Thursday evening. Yes, Thursday will be Thanksgiving, and in millions of homes, Dad will just finish the sumptuous feast, the plump roast turkey with all the delicious trimmings. And now he's serving the coffee that will perfectly round out the happy Thanksgiving meal. Yes, a cup of the most popular brand of coffee throughout the length and breadth of America. Wonderfully delicious Maxwell House coffee, the only coffee that brings to your Thanksgiving table true, good to the last drop flavor. That's because no other coffee, no coffee but Maxwell House, brings you the same superb blend of choice coffees from these rich and fertile highlands of Latin America. Manizales coffees, famous the world over for mellowness, are chosen for the Maxwell House blend. For richness, carefully selected Medellin coffees are also added. To give Maxwell House fine, full body, Bucaramanga's coffees are included, while many other choice coffees are added for vigor. So, with all the other savory delicacies you're ordering for this Thanksgiving Day, be sure to include a can of America's most popular brand of coffee. Yes, for the very best in coffee drinking pleasure, Thanksgiving Day and every day, it's Maxwell House, always good to the last drop.
Now, Mr. Newman, I think you wanted to follow through.
Well, I wanted to go to something else. Senator, what do you think's going to happen to that Democratic majority in the Senate when President Truman tosses the Civil Rights Program at...
I don't know. The Civil Rights Program has been tossed to a Congress when there has been a Democratic majority before. And it will probably do as it has done before. It will probably have hearings and discussions, and I suppose they'll go through the same old battle on cloture they've gone through many times.
Go ahead, Mr.
Well, Newman. Don't you think that those 8 or 10 Southern senators are going to certainly turn to the Taft leadership, and they're certainly not going to bury the hatchet that they tossed around pretty well in this last campaign, do you think?
Well, if they find anything promising in the Taft leadership, I'm happy to have them try it out. The Republicans tried it.
Mr. Davis.
Do you think the Secretary of Agriculture should fix the margins for commodity trading?
Margins for commodity trading, yes, I have thought so and have testified that that is true when we're in periods of completely abnormal conditions.
You mean only it's a limited period proposition with you?
That's right.
Well, do you think this is a time now when the secretary should have such powers?
No.
Why not?
Because
a year ago you thought so.
Yes.
You have. What's changed?
The amount of grain.
Only grain?
Yes.
Well, I can't ask you any more on that.
Senator Anderson, I'd like to ask you a question on this Hoover report. What do you think will happen to that now? Will that be thrown out?
Well, I don't know. There'll be a temptation. You know, it's awfully easy to stir Democrats up by starting talking about President Hoover, the Hoover Report. There'll be a temptation to toss it to one side and forget it. I hope that doesn't happen. I think that a serious, conscientious, fine job has been done by the commission. I think it'd be too bad if that was tossed away and the fullest study and discussion wasn't given to it. I know that I don't agree with all the recommendations that I understand they've made about reorganizing the Department of Agriculture, but I'm glad to have them make a suggestion. The time to accomplish it is when the administration is starting in. I think it'd be all right.
Mr. Raskin.
Senator, I didn't hear in your discussion of the Civil Rights Bill just where you stood on it. Where will Senator Clinton P. Anderson be when that comes up?
Well, I hope that I still will do what I think a person ought to do. Namely, attend hearings or read the hearings and listen to the discussion and try to use his judgment when he casts the vote. I've never had much sympathy for the people who decided in advance how they were going to vote on issues. If you do that in advance, you might just as well have a push-button arrangement around the various states and people vote without any discussion. Why do you hold hearings? Why do you debate for days on the floor? I hope in order to change people's minds. And Senator, I certainly intend to take a look at them.
Senator, you're going back as a remarkably open-minded freshman in the Senate. Is there any subject on which you've got a firm opinion?
Well, I've said that on the questions that I know something about, where I don't have to have too much discussion, namely something that deals with agriculture, I do have some firm opinions. On various items, have you a firm opinion? I didn't have a firm opinion when I went back as a member of the House on the question of anti-poll tax bills. But I signed a petition to take an anti-poll tax bill out, and I voted for the anti-poll tax bill when it got to the floor. But I didn't do it as a matter of judgment in advance. I did it the way I think a man ought to operate. After I had heard discussions, after I had attended hearings, after I'd had the opportunity to benefit by the suggestions others had made, I still think that's a proper way to do it.
Mr. Marr.
How about in your recent election campaign, Senator? Did you take any stand on the civil rights program?
No.
Wasn't an issue out there, was it?
No. I couldn't get that sort of an issue in that state. The issue out there was whether I knew anything about international affairs and whether I'd been at Yalta. And I hadn't been.
What was your stand on international affairs?
Well, I'm very strongly in support of General Marshall. I think he's an excellent person. I'm strongly in support of the Marshall Plan, the European Recovery Program. I have expressed my great confidence in Paul Hoffman. I think he's started off in a very fine fashion. And I don't know what else might be of interest.
Mr. Davis.
Do you think the 81st Congress should continue the Un-American Activities Committee?
Well, I objected in this last campaign because the House made an investigation of a Senate race. It's a House matter, and therefore I probably should stay out of it, but I did not vote for a continuance of the Un-American Activities Committee the last time when it came up when I was a member of the House. And if I were a member of it this time, I wouldn't vote to continue it.
Well, why not? Don't you think there is any un-American activity in this country after what has been produced by this Thomas Committee, or whatever you want to call it?
I think there has been some un-American activity, but I don't know whether it's been on the part of witnesses or on the part of the committee.
Well, would you like to know which?
Well, I saw the Dyes Committee operate, and I was a member of a special committee that made a study of what the Dyes Committee did. The Appropriations Committee was instructed specially to make an investigation of a great many cases. And after I finished that, I wasn't much interested in the continuation of the Committee on Un-American Activities.
Mr. Newman.
In a new labor law, Senator, would you insist that the non-communist affidavit be included?
Well, I don't know that I'd insist. I think it has been all right, but I don't think it's an extremely important matter.
Well, do you think it? I think it's important enough, don't you, that a man should be willing to tell his country rather he belongs to a group which wishes to overthrow this country by violence.
Yes, if you want to take everybody and ask him to do that, I think so. But I don't know whether you should just single out labor for that treatment. I've seen some other people that I might like to have that question asked of, too. I think if it was a general question to everybody in the Republic, I might be in favor of it. I don't mind having it asked me.
Mr. Raskin.
Senator, talking of investigations by Congress, isn't there one going on about your own election? How do you think that'll come out, the charge that federal employees that were unduly influenced in your election?
Well, I hope they continue the investigation. I'd be very happy for them to continue it because I think it was as bad a piece of work as could be seen. I think it's too bad any time a congressional committee is used to defeat or attempt to defeat any one particular candidate. And there was no question about the charges that were made in the New Mexico contest were ridiculous. The federal employees were not massed out to trying to help me get elected. And I don't know whether they would have helped me or hurt me, but I would have welcomed their support if they'd wanted to. But they didn't help me, and I knew they weren't out working, and it was a silly thing, I thought, to make that sort of a charge.
Senator Anderson, you're very close to President Truman. As a matter of fact, you were spoken of quite frequently before the nomination as perhaps the vice presidential choice. Lots of people think President Truman and this administration will go very socialistic. What do you think?
Well, I don't think so. I think I have seen President Truman under all sorts of circumstances, certainly under some very difficult circumstances right after the close of the last war.
You think he'll be more conservative?
I don't know that he'll be more conservative, but I have a tremendous confidence in his ability to keep his feet on the ground even when the going is mighty tough. I think he's an honest public official as I've ever met in my life, and I'm perfectly willing to trust my share in this government to his leadership.
But you don't think we have any fear of socialism?
No, I don't think so.
Mr. Davis.
I'd like to go back, Senator, to the fact that you were talking about the investigation of your election at the time the investigation was started. How do you feel about the investigation against Parnell Thomas at the time that was started?
Well, I don't know when it was started.
Well, it was started before election, you know that. And it came out just before the election. Before November 2nd, the thing began to boil up and become public knowledge. You know that.
Well, it isn't the first time that people have tried to investigate folks who are alleged to have insisted upon kickbacks. And the period to investigate, I suppose, is when the information becomes public. And as I remember it, it became public prior to the election.
Just prior.
Yes, but yeah. It didn't become public because of something that the government had done, but something that a newsman had done.
You're sure of that?
Oh, yes.
Couldn't they have investigated other people first?
Well, there aren't very many members of Senator House that are ever checked very carefully on this question of kickbacks. I'm not trying to prejudge. I'm not trying to prejudge whether that man is guilty or not, but I say to you that the number of people who might be guilty are very, very few, and I don't know his circumstances.
Mr. Newman.
Do you mean to tell me that kickbacks aren't accepted in the politics as we know them in this country?
Aren't accepted? I didn't mean to say that. I don't know what you're referring to, but I say the practice of a member of the House in taking money back from his employees is a very rare thing. In the few years that I have been in the Congress, I have felt reasonably sure that at least two other people were guilty of the practice. And one of them was defeated, I think, pretty largely because of the story that he was guilty of it. And the other one got defeated, and I hope his home folks knew it on him. But those men don't stay in the Congress.
Mr. Moss.
Senator, I'd like to get back to your favorite subject, food. Here in the East, the milk prices had run a new high. The municipal government, consumers groups, and others have protested in vain, and there just can't be any recourse, they find, with the federal government or anybody else to get a reduction. Do you think that the public can look for the adoption of a new formula that would be acceptable to consumers, milk companies, and the public generally?
No, I think the best policeman on prices is the presence of a large supply of grain. As long as dairymen had to pay fancy prices for their grain, as long as corn prices kept moving up, then you could expect that milk prices would move up. When you get an abundance of feed, they'll come down. They may come down slowly, but you'll find that one particular section of a milk shed will find it's got an abundance of milk, and it'll start trying to dump that onto the market, and it'll bring other people into line, in my opinion.
Mr. Raskin.
Well, Senator, don't you feel, in the light of present world conditions, with the great shortage of food throughout the world, that it's impossible for us to achieve that degree of abundance which would cause a surplus of food throughout the world and thus bring prices down? Don't we need some other method?
Oh, no. We're already at a point where where there is a surplus of grain, feed grains, in this country, because the amount that you can export from a country in a given year is limited. I happen to know, because I took many a beating on that subject. The amount of grain that you can load on trains and get priority for shipment and roll to seaboard is very, very limited, and I don't think we'll be able to export too much.
Mr. Davis, now.
Senator, the last big drought we had was in 1936, wasn't it?
I wouldn't know.
Well,
I think that's about right.
I think that's about right, because I've just heard agricultural college professors say that, and they expect another drought around another 2 years. That is, there's a cycle of drought.
They've been expecting one for the last 3 or 4 years, and it hasn't come.
Well, what are we doing to protect that? After all, we have to depend on them, don't we, more or less?
On
anticipation of drought.
Yes, you do have to. But we are now producing far more than we need for this country. We will accumulate, I think, gradually, a granary that can be filled and can be available for those periods. It was a very fortunate thing that we had that sort of a situation when we got into this war.
Well, why do prices stay up if we're producing so well?
Well, they're down a full dollar on wheat.
Well, we're not eating wheat exactly.
Oh, yes, you do.
I'm talking about meat and everything
else. Well, now, meat will not come down tremendously. It'll come down some in anticipation.
Turkeys are up higher than ever.
But, yes, you've got a shortage of them, but the thing that gives you an abundance of meat is going to be the size of the pig crops as they come along, and that's tied to your corn. The farmers understand the corn-hog ratio thoroughly. You can drive out through Iowa and ask the farmer what a corn-hog ratio is, and he'll be able to tell you about where it is. And he knows that the present corn-hog ratio means that he must put his corn into hogs, and he will do it. And you'll see a very substantial drop in pork prices.
I'm sorry to interrupt, gentlemen, but our time is up. Thank you, Senator-elect Anderson, for your willingness to meet the press this evening. Right now, suppose you learn how folks all over the country enjoy a truly good cup of coffee every day in the week.
Yes, north, south, east, or west, it's Maxwell House wherever you go. Famous for finer flavor, this delicious coffee is good to the last drop. For the best in coffee drinking pleasure, always ask for Maxwell House. Next week's guest will be another important figure in the news. Now, this is Ken Roberts saying goodnight for Mr. Dick Marr, Mr. Abe Raskin, Mr. Murray Davis, Mr. Larry Newman, Miss Martha Roundtree, and Senator-elect Clinton P. Anderson.